From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. And what a way to celebrate the first day of summer, thanking everybody in Los Angeles listening to us on KFI AM 640, keeping Coast to Coast AM the number one rated late night program in the City of Angels. Thank you. Hurricane Celia grew stronger Monday evening in the East Pacific Ocean and has now been upgraded to a Category 2. Celia was centered about 505 miles south of Manzanillo, Mexico, and the storm is not seen as a threat to land. But what this tells you, we are smack dab in the beginning now of hurricane season, so hold on. The effects of the Gulf of Mexico oil spill continued to spread eastward, leaving tar balls along the wet white beaches of the Florida Panhandle, while Washington lawmakers maneuvered through the tricky political currents of the unprecedented environmental disaster. And the man President Barack Obama picked to run the $20 billion Gulf Oil Spill Damage Fund said many people are in desperate financial straits and need immediate relief. Kenneth Feinberg, who ran the Victims Claim Fund set up in the wake of the 9/11 terror attacks, said he's determined to speed up payments of claims. His appearance came a week after the administration worked out an arrangement with the oil giant BP to establish this independent claims fund, initially $20 billion, and pledged to reconfigure the system and expedite payments. Feinberg said BP has paid out over $100 million so far. I wonder if insurance covers any of that. And companies that ferry people and supplies to offshore oil rigs have asked a federal judge to lift a six-month moratorium on a new deepwater drilling projects imposed in the aftermath of the massive Gulf spill. U.S. District Judge Martin Feldman heard 2 hours of arguments and said that he will decide by Wednesday whether to overturn the ban imposed by President Barack Obama's administration after the rig explosion. In a moment, Captain Kelly Sweeney joins us for the hour, taking your calls as well. Al-Qaeda's U.S.-born spokesman warned President Barack Obama that the militant group may launch new attacks that would kill more Americans than previous ones. In a taunting 24-minute message that dwells on the setbacks of the president's administration, including the loss of Massachusetts Senate seat to the Republicans, Adam Gada said that Al-Qaeda conditions for peace with the U.S. include cutting support for Israel and withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan. Meanwhile, calling himself a Muslim soldier, a defiant Pakistan-born U.S. citizen pleaded guilty to carrying out the failed Times Square bombing and left a sinister warning that unless U.S. leaves Muslim lands alone, we will be attacking the U.S. So a lot of rhetoric coming from sides there. The Obama administration's flagship effort to help people in danger of losing their homes is falling flat. More than a third of the 1.24 million borrowers who have enrolled in the $75 billion mortgage modification program have simply dropped out. Catherine Austin Fitz with us. Catherine, why are they dropping out? And does this mean that their houses are going to go into foreclosure?
Most of them, yes, George. You know, in Washington, when I worked in Washington, you saw it all the time, particularly at HUD and the other housing agencies. You have programs which are really press release programs and then programs which are real programs. And this was always intended from the beginning to be a press release program, not a real program. We, in 2008, there were about 10 trillion mortgages outstanding in the country. That's all residential mortgages. That year, in that 18 months, we gave the banks $12 trillion. Think about it, George. It was enough to pay off 100% of the mortgages in the country, plus $2 trillion. So now the banks have the $12 trillion, and they're making money on proprietary trading. They've gotten compensated in full. They don't need to service mortgages. I regularly talk to attorneys who are in a situation where they can do a modification. They have the resources to work it out, and literally they make 20 calls a week at the top banks, cannot get anybody to even return their phone call or talk to them.
No, it's frustrating. Here's a case of a 48-year-old worker in Queens, New York. His name's Carlos Woods. He said he made 9 payments during the trial phase of this modification, but he got kicked out of the program by his bank after he missed one payment afterward, according to the bank. He said his lawyer can prove that he made the payment. One payment, they said he missed, so they kick him out. They don't even work with him.
George, I hate to say it. At some time, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, at some point it's a duck. And these guys, this is a pump and dump.
Yeah, it is. Catherine, thanks so much for that update. Former astronaut John Glenn wants NASA's space shuttles to keep flying until a reliable replacement is ready, no matter how long it takes. Glenn joined the national debate over America's future in space and became the latest ex-astronaut to speak out on the matter. He issued a 9-page statement in which he questioned the decision to retire the shuttle fleet and rely on Russia to take astronauts to the International Space Station. Our feature story at coasttocoastam.com. A group of 7th graders in California discovered a mysterious cave on Mars as part of a research project to study images taken by a NASA spacecraft orbiting the red planet. 16 students from the Evergreen Middle School in Cottonwood, California, found what looks to be a hole in the roof of a cave. It's a pretty neat little story. CoastToCoastAM.com. Up next, a full hour with Captain Kelly Sweeney as we talk about the BP oil spill and take your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, full hour with the Captain Kelly Sweeney, Master Mariners. We're going to be talking about the BP spill, what's been going on to date, and also some questions. Kelly, how are you?
Ahoy, George. Thanks for having me back.
My pleasure. Look, now this has been on the internet, so take it for what it's worth. But there is a story going around that says that BP has, one, either hired some Russian submersibles, subs down there, that are checking the ocean floor, and they're saying it's a disaster down there, or two, they want to hire them to check on the spill. Have you heard anything about that?
I have heard rumors to that effect, but nothing verifying it. But I do know that from sources close that they are concerned about the condition of the well near where the leak is occurring and below, where they stopped and where they're trying to punch in with the relief wells. They're concerned that it could be caving in, it could not be strong enough, which is one of the problems that they had during the top kill. They wanted to avoid, and you remember when they were attempting that, they wanted to avoid putting too much heavy mud down there to stop it. And instead of just letting it flow and just keep filling it up, they were worried that it was actually going to cause the well down there to basically give way and then have a completely uncontrolled flow. And they're still very concerned about that. And so, yes, I think that if they might be looking at something like that, but I have not been able to confirm.
They've already paid out $105 million to 32,000 claimants, and I'm sure that's going to go much higher. They're going to eat up this money. Now, this $20 billion is done over, what, 4 years, I think?
Yes, I think so.
All right, so I wonder if they had insurance. I wonder if any insurance companies are out there that'll pick up the slack here.
No question.
Probably AIG, and we probably bailed them out, so we're actually paying for it, right?
There's no question that a lot of that money is insurance money. It's not all going to come out of BP's pocket.
Well, say that's something the mainstream's really not talking about right now.
That's true enough. The Exxon Valdez, a lot of that money that they paid out and are still, fighting about right now in court, still 21 years later, a lot of that money was insurance money.
So you have been saying all along since this thing occurred that we had to do some extra drilling down there, relief drills.
Yes.
They're working on two. When are they going to complete these?
Well, they're according to the latest figures, the first relief well, which was started May 2nd, is around 16,000 feet right now. And the second well, which was started May 16th, and there is coming in from the other side, is at about 10,000 feet. And the plan, and this, I think a lot of people don't really know how tough this is going to be, George. When this disaster occurred, they were at about 18,300 and change below the surface of the water.
Gosh.
And both the relief wells.
That's deep into the crust.
Oh, yes, it's way down there. Both the relief wells are about a half a mile thereabouts off the original well site. Okay, so you have one on about a half a mile away on one side, and another vessel drilling a half a mile away or so on the other side. And they're coming in at an angle around 23 degrees.
Is that why they're using up so much depth footage? Because if they went straight down, it would have been shorter, right?
Yes, but what they're going to do is they're going to come in at an angle to speed it up. And then when they get close, and how they do that is they send an electric current down the pipe, down the casing, that basically when it touches the original well's casing, they can tell, of course, when they get there, when they get close, then they're going to basically go next to the original well, straight down about another 1,000 feet or so. So what they're doing is they're coming at an angle. When they get close to the original well, they're going to then go straight down like another 1,000 feet, and they're basically going to try to join in about 18,000 feet below the surface, thereabouts, and they're going to have to punch in into a pipe that is 7 inches in diameter.
They have to find that?
They have to not only find it, but they're going to punch into it, basically cut into that pipe. And then how the relief well would work is that they're going to then put in cement and mud and basically close off the original well. This is how hard this is going to be.
This is all done by robotics?
Yes. Well, the remotely operated vehicles are basically monitoring what's going on, and they are controlling the drilling and keeping an eye on things with closed-circuit cameras.
Kelly, I think they hit one of the biggest oil fields ever.
Well, this estimates vary, George, but basically a ballpark figure of what's under there, where they were drilling this pool, 46 billion barrels, and every barrel is 42 gallons. So we're talking a ballpark figure of 1 trillion gallons of oil. This is the pool that they were drilling in. Okay, and they're not the only ones out there.
That'll last 3 SUVs.
Yeah, at least that long.
Yeah.
But what they're going to have to do with this relief well, and it hasn't been very clear, that they haven't been made it very clear in the media, but they're drilling at an angle towards the original well. They're going to go, when they get close, And they get close to the original well, then they're going to follow it down close to it, but next to it. And then when they get down to around the original site where the leak is, 18,000 feet thereabouts below the surface of the water, then they have to go into the original pipe, 7.5-inch pipe, basically, and that's how they're going to try to stop this thing. This is how delicate, how difficult we're talking about this operation.
Okay, and if this doesn't work, and we really won't know this for several more months.
Yes, at least I would say till the end of July, or probably August. I mean, they're ahead of schedule a little bit, but, it's been varying. But I'd say early August.
All right, what if it doesn't work? What's next?
Well, Plan A is the first relief well, which right now is about 16,000.
Right.
Plan B is the second relief well.
You don't need both.
Well, you might need both. If the first one doesn't work.
Well, no. If the first works, do you need the second?
No.
All right.
But if number one and number two don't work, then at that point, then they're going to have to try another relief well. They're not going to, if those two don't work, then they're going to have to start again.
Man, I ran into some people this weekend who I would not consider to be green type people, right? They're not earthy people. They're not environmentalists. They just have lost something. And I've got to tell you, this is a very strange situation, Kelly, because people who normally would not be concerned about the livelihood of the planet are upset. It's almost as if a chunk of their own body has been taken away.
Well, it's...
Do you sense that?
I sure do, George. People who might otherwise not be too worried about a small spill here and there are very concerned, and rightly so. So far, this is the fourth worst oil spill in the history of our civilization, the fourth. It's coming up on number three, and by some estimates, it's getting close to number two. But by various, and they're not going to know for sure until they put a flow meter down, which they're going to try to do by the end of the month to really get a handle on how much is spilling. But by all the estimates, were at least 8 times what was spilled in the Exxon Valdez, and by many estimates, and I think this is closer, we're probably close to 12 to 14 times what spilled in the Exxon Valdez, and that's just today.
Now, what was the biggest oil spill ever then?
The biggest oil spill in U.S. history happened around 1910, 1911. The biggest one, the Gulf War, the first Gulf War in Kuwait, there were 380 million gallons that were spilled by various estimates, 380 to 540.
But that wasn't one well.
No, that was intentional, of course, to stop our troops when they were set on purpose.
There was one in the Gulf of Mexico, right?
Yes, that was the in the Gulf of Campeche in 79, and
that's the biggest so far, right?
Well, that was the result of an accident, and right now I think we've surpassed that. Which would, by if that were the case, and we have surpassed that, then this is the largest oil spill that is the result of an accident.
That one lasted 290 days.
Yes, that was I can't remember the exact days, but it was in the mid 79.
1970, right. It dumped 3.3 million barrels of oil into the Gulf waters.
It was a huge spill,
okay,
yes.
Okay, where did all that oil go? Did it go to the beaches? Where is it?
Pemex tried to claim that some of it was recovered, some was burned. And but it washed up on the beaches in Texas and South Texas, and it was a real disaster. But they, Pemex, which was the Mexican oil company, they were not real forthcoming on how bad it really was. But there were estimates that it was between 10 and 30,000 barrels a day, which by what's going on right now is about half of what's being spilled per day. In the BP.
Now, what do you think about this group that wants to end the drilling moratorium? They want to work. They want to go to work. So, I mean, are they wrong?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, George. It can't be business as usual. I mean, I think that sooner or later, drilling is going to have to continue down in the Gulf because we're reliant on a large amount of that oil that comes out of the Gulf of Mexico for our domestic oil. But we cannot have business as usual. I would like to see, before this moratorium is lifted, a requirement that every rig working in our waters is registered in the United States, hires only American mariners and oil workers, and is subject to U.S. Coast Guard inspections. You know, George, a U.S. Coast Guard inspection of a large drilling rig like the Deepwater Horizon lasts somewhere between... Oh, it could be up to 2 weeks. For the Marshall Islands registry, an inspection of an oil rig like the Deepwater Horizon is like 4 to 8 hours, like a half day before lunch,
right.
and as opposed to 2 weeks. So we can't have business as usual. You know, we have to have our control and our laws, because I'm a firm believer in that the fact that this vessel was registered overseas, foreign flag, and not subject to our more stringent U.S. Drilling requirements, that was a major reason why this thing happened in the first place.
They say they have skimmed 558,000 barrels of oil from the water. You believe that?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Now, that's probably an oil and water mix. I mean,
sure.
I've been involved in two oil spill cleanups, and even under the best of circumstances, which they have not had throughout the entire time, 30 to 50% of recovery of surface oil. See, one of the things, George, that everybody's kind of forgotten, except with listening to Coast, because you've mentioned it a number of times. There's a lot of oil, and how much, they're not even sure. The scientists are still trying to get a handle on it. These oil plumes underneath the surface of the water, they're not being recovered. They're not being cleaned up by the oil skimmers because they're staying below the surface of the water where they can't be gotten. But they are moving with the currents, and there's already an oil sheen, which had to have been moved by the Gulf Stream off the coast of Cuba, and Mexico started getting ready for the shift in the currents, which happens usually around September, first part of October, that time of year, to start pushing the oil down towards that way. They're starting to get ready for it to hit down on their shores. So, there's a lot of oil underneath the surface that's not being cleaned.
Now, the head of BP went to some kind of yacht race this weekend. What's wrong with these people?
Unbelievable. You know, there's a maritime blog that a lot of people look at called The Bitter End. The guy I know, Richard Rodriguez, Captain Richard Rodriguez, And one of the lead stories he had on there was about that. And it was unbelievable.
They just don't think. Kelly, we're going to keep you for phone calls when we come right back. In just a moment, we'll give you those numbers. But if you want to text us a question, that's 818-298-6521. And Skype is open at George97313. Next hour, Whitley Strieber joins us, the Omega Point. He's going to talk about what happens after 2012. Fascinating program. Up next, we'll take your phone calls with Captain Kelly Sweeney right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. So, Kelly, would you go into a submersible and go down there 5,000 feet to take a look at that thing if they asked you to?
Well, George, I don't think I'd want to do that, no. I've known some scientists. I've been on scientific research ships where scientists have gone down not that far, but pretty darn far. And I would just be thinking to myself, you know, if any of that gave way, I would be scrunched up with all that pressure in a very small area. So I don't think I'd want to do that.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Pawnee, Oklahoma starts us with Byron. Go ahead, Byron.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Byron.
Hello. Good morning to both of you. I was just, when this first happened, they kept saying, oh, it's going to take a while. It's too hard. The currents are too strong. It's too cold. It's too deep. But how in the world did they first were able to drill down there in the first place?
Well, they go through a process where they get permission and get government okay. And then, of course, they have in this case, it was the Deepwater Horizon, which was a semi-submersible, what we call mobile offshore drilling unit. And basically, what it was an oil rig that was not attached to the bottom, but floated in the water and was held by propellers that were tied into a GPS-based satellite system that is monitored while they're out there. And then they start the drilling operations just like they would on a regular oil rig, but they do it, of course, in deep water. And there are other rigs that are further out than that. They're drilling out further.
Okay.
So that's what they're using to try to cap that off or try to fix that?
Yeah. One of the rigs is like that. The other one is not. It's a it doesn't have any containment facility on it. So basically, the oil that's recovering, they're just burning off right now at the time.
Kelly, do you think, what does your gut tell you? Do you think they're going to stop this?
Well, George, there's a lot riding on these relief wells. I mean, basically everything. And if they don't work, it's going to be a terrible situation. And you know the weather.
But what's your gut tell you?
I'm not a betting man, George, but I'm not sure I'd want to lay any money down on it. And you know, hurricane season is coming. As a matter of fact, speaking of hurricane season,
we've got our first already. It's on the Mexican side.
Yes, but on this side, on the Gulf side, there's a very large disturbance right now off the coast of Haiti, and down by the by Aruba, the Netherlands Antilles, that is developing. And in the next 24 hours, the conditions are very good for this thing to turn into a tropical cyclone. We could easily have a hurricane in the Caribbean and working up into the Gulf of Mexico. It's moving right now.
And if that happens, they got to stop working, right?
Yes.
And get out of there.
Yes. And the oil spill recovery vessels that are cleaning up on the surface, they have to go to a safe harbor. Everything stops. There's a storm surge that when a hurricane hits. I mean, Katrina had a storm surge that was around 25 or 30 feet in places. And a lot of it has to do with the shoreline, a low coastline and a low shoreline. Gets really hit hard with a hurricane surge, and oiled water would be pushed far inland to where it would normally not go. The real concern, in the next 48 hours, we could easily have a hurricane, named hurricane in the Caribbean, working in the Gulf of Mexico.
All right, we go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, next, west of the Rockies. Peter, good morning. You're up.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi. Ahoy, Peter.
Good evening. I have a quick question, gentlemen. I've never heard this addressed. Is this in international waters, or is this in continental United States waters?
In our territorial waters.
It is?
Yes.
So they extended it out to 200 miles then, because I heard the last I knew it was 12 miles. So.
Yeah, actually, it's there are certain places. It's based on the law of the sea treaty, which we have not ratified, but it goes out even further. It's basically based on the continental shelf.
Uh-huh.
And this was in our waters. And that's one of the big beefs I have, is that we have foreign flag drilling rigs working in our waters. And to me, that is like unacceptable.
I fully concur. If that's the case, I fully concur.
You know, it should be our rigs, subject to our laws. I mean, there was one of the big problems, in my opinion, and what may have been the major factor on the Deepwater Horizon, which started this whole disaster, killed 11 men, is that there was two people in charge. They had a dual command system that was allowed by foreign regulations that was not allowed by U.S. regulations. The licensed captain was able to be overruled by somebody who did not have a mariner's license, what's called an offshore installation manager. In the U.S., under U.S. regulations, the OIM, or the offshore installation manager, and the master, both are basically the same person. Well, they almost always are the same person. And if they're not the same person, they both have to have a captain's license, which they do not have to have in international regulations. And I think that this dual command, and there were precious minutes after the explosions occurred, when the transfer of command changed from the guy who was the OIM in charge of drilling back to the captain during the emergency, that I think may have been able to stop this entire disaster. I mean, they had, under normal circumstances, you would never abandon ship as a mariner until the captain gave the order. That is just not done. But in this case, there were the lifeboats were already off the Deepwater Horizon, and the licensed captain didn't even know about it by many reports and certainly didn't give the order.
All right, thanks, Kelly, for that. Saginaw, Minnesota, not Michigan, Minnesota. James, you're up with us on the wild card line. Go ahead, James.
Boy, James.
Hello, gentlemen. Yeah, I got kind of a sad story for you. My cousin, she works down at a BP filling station in Duluth, Minnesota, and she's been having a lot of customers coming in there harassing her. I don't know what they're saying exactly, but they're giving her a lot of hard times down there, and she's actually been in tears a couple times. The same people that are buying their gas, you know?
Well, that's not acceptable because, I mean, obviously, I have cousins who live in Duluth, and a matter of fact, I was born in Minnesota. But
cool.
That's another story. But in any case, that's unacceptable. I mean, obviously, somebody like your sister on the retail side is just, you know, selling gas. I mean,
it's
sitting there
working, doing their job, you know.
But I will.
I had a quick question, too, though, if you got time. About those, when they first put those containment domes down, did they have something on the top of them? Like I was thinking like a vacuum, so that when they were putting it down, there was something for the oil to go into?
Yeah, there was a pipe that went back up to the ship. It was basically like a funnel with a straw back up to the ship. And they were basically sucking back up the oil up through that straw, which was the pipe, from that top hat.
All right, thanks. Let's go to Hilo, Hawaii. Dan, first-time caller. Hey, Dan, go ahead.
Good evening.
Boy,
I got two quick questions. The first one is, when you were explaining how the relief well is going to go meet up with the main well.
Yes.
Okay. What are they going to do then? Are they going to cut into it, or what? Are they going to try to plug it, or what?
Well, yeah, basically, you know, we heard a lot about earlier about the top kill, right? And how they sent heavy mud, barite-laden mud, down to try to plug that well. But this is really, the other term for this is called a bottom kill. Okay, so they're drilling further down, and they're going to try to do it from down below. Basically very similar. Put mud down in there and then cement it over.
Yeah, they were talking something like 100,000 pounds pressure, though, yeah?
It's a huge amount of pressure, yes. And one of the major concerns is that the well itself might be compromised, what they call a lack of well integrity, which means it's very fragile, and that's the reason that the top kill, they were concerned, but they are, that it didn't really work. They couldn't just start having, as I said before, flow too much of that heavy mud and cement down in there because they didn't want to actually, you know, blow that well open. The point where they couldn't, it was uncontrolled, and they're concerned about that now. They're 1,000 feet or so below that wellhead at the seabed. They're very concerned about the integrity of that well. So it's going to be a real touchy situation the next month or so.
Kelly, text message in from Lance in Maryland, wants to know what will happen to gas prices. Will they double? How long will it take?
Well, George and Lance, I'm not an economic expert, but I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I'm sure the price of BP gas is going to change.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, our science advisor, head of the enterprisemission.com, Richard Hoagland, even sends in a message that he says the well is gone. BP knows this already. It's only waiting for the drilling to reach the proper level to begin the educational process to let everyone know how limited the options are at this point.
Well, I know Richard has good intuition, George. I mean, I heard him a couple weeks ago, and he has an interesting take on a lot of different things.
Very perceptive.
And a lot of times he's ahead of the curve. So, but officially, I know that Admiral Allen was asked this question a couple days ago, last week actually, near the end of last week. And officially, they are not 100% sure about the well integrity down below, but they are very concerned about it. And so, yeah, it's a real touchy situation, no question.
How come they didn't take up the offer from James Cameron and go down there with a couple submersibles when he offered?
I don't know why. I don't know why. I think that a lot of times their procedures, and it's interesting, if you look at the Gulf of Campeche, which you and I had talked about a little bit before the break, down in Mexico, which happened in the late 70s, early 80s, in so many ways, it was very similar to this. I mean, it was a rig that caught fire. It wasn't quite as deep a water, but they had the same response, the use of dispersants and the whole bit. It's almost like they have this textbook response and that they try these certain things and they have never gotten out of those standard responses. And I don't know whether it's controlled by the insurance companies. I think that might be part of it. Or it's just, the procedure that they've established. I don't know, but it's very similar, and it hasn't changed in 20 years. They're doing the same basic thing they did 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Jerry's east of the Rockies in McMinnville, Tennessee. Hey, Jerry, go ahead.
Hi, Jerry.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hey, I called in the other night. I contacted BP like 3 times concerning an idea that I have that I think would probably work, but trying to get information to anybody has just been ridiculous.
They won't take phone calls from anybody.
Right.
They've had more and more calls. They probably don't think anybody has the solution. They pay all the experts. It's unfortunate, but there should be some kind of clearing agency for these things.
There have been some good ideas, George. I mean, you have some listeners who have some fantastic ideas, and I've been gotten calls and emails after I've been on. And they have fantastic ideas, and I pass them on to guys I know close to the scene, and they go to the website and they put it up, but nothing ever happens. I don't know why. I guess they're just following, their quote-unquote experts and doing the standard thing.
Absolutely. We next go to Van Nuys, California. It's Robert Stern on Coast to Coast. Robert, go home. Go ahead.
All right, Robert.
And then go home.
Dad, get rid of me before you even get online. What is this, conspiracy?
Hi, Robert, how are you?
Oh, very good, very good. I think very good, unless the information I'm about to say is actually real. There's a lot of rumors on the Internet stating that once we poked a hole in the ground, which is under over 100,000 PSI, basically, the ocean floor fractured, okay? Now, I went on the Internet to confirm this, that the Russians, we did hire the Russians because they're the only ones who have the deep sub that can go 12,000 feet down, which it's only about 6,000 feet it had to go down. But the Russians went down there and surveyed the seafloor, and they said that the seafloor is ruptured, it's cracked. And if the seafloor is cracked, the only thing we could do is with the relief wells try to relieve the pressure. But you're talking 100,000 PSI with approximately a trillion gallons of fuel. Now, my main reason I called in here that if, in fact, the seafloor does crack open and we and a trillion gallons releases into the ocean, not only that, not even the oil isn't so bad, there's billions of cubic feet of natural gas. Now, natural gas is extremely flammable. If that gets into the ocean and the oil, I mean, we're talking about maybe a planet killer here where we can actually pretty much stifle the whole oxygen on this planet because our oxygen and most of our oxygen comes from the ocean.
That's a good point.
We could kill ourselves off.
I know one thing that they are very concerned about the integrity of this well, and And I've heard a lot and read some on the internet and received a lot of emails about the seafloor. Nobody's been able to come back and confirm that officially. And I think that for me, I'm the kind of person who likes to have that, you know, verification. But I will say this, that it is a huge amount of pressure. It's a very large pool of oil. And if this relief well, what the bottom kill, what they're working on, doesn't work, then at that point, the only thing that they can do, and then it'll be, you know, an ongoing spill, will only be to recover as much as possible using whatever kind of containment they have on top to funnel back up to the ships above. That's going to be the only thing at that point they can do until they get another relief well down there.
Leah is in the state of Washington. Go ahead, Leah, and welcome to the show.
Hey, George.
Hi.
Hi, Leah.
Oh, I can't believe I'm talking to George Norris. But I wanted to tell you that I talked to my mom. I'm from Louisiana originally.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to my mother this morning, and her uncle, he used to be a shrimper, and he got hired by BP to go out there and look for oil where it starts. And anyway, they keep telling him it's 20 miles off the coast, and they keep sending him 40 miles off the coast.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, they keep, I guess, I was thinking possibly because of the media, that, you know, people taking pictures and whatnot, they might want to see them like 40 miles off the coast instead of 20 miles off the coast.
Well, there's a flyover, a no-flyover over the oil spill area that's been established for a couple weeks almost now. And, you know, the average person can't go over there and see the extent as it is anyway. But I will say this, that the oil sheen is already off the coast of Cuba. And there's the only way that that could have gotten over there would have been the Gulf Stream. And then, you know, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when it starts going up the East Coast. I mean, the National Center for Atmospheric Research thinks it's going to be by, let's say, September, October. It could easily be happened before that. And a lot of people don't know, but the Gulf Stream goes all the way up to Cape Hatteras, starts moving offshore along the East Coast. It goes up all the way across the Atlantic over to England. It goes a long way. It's basically a warm river in the ocean. And, I mean, it's not fresh water, but that's basically what it is. And so how far this oil is going to go is who knows.
Gosh, Kelly, it's just, it's mind-boggling.
It really is, George. It's an unbelievably concerning situation. I mean, Leah's father was a shrimper. 20% of the Gulf right now has been shut down to fishing. And
that's going to go up. That's going to go up higher.
Oh, it's going to go up higher, no question.
Let's squeeze in a quick one from Tony in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, George. Hey, Captain. Good morning.
Good morning.
Two brief comments and a quick question. I know this show deals a lot with the Illuminati and, you know, otherworldly things.
Yeah.
There was a movie that came out, a Nicolas Cage movie, a year and a month before the oil well explosion, in which a psychic leaves a bunch of clues, and one of the clues is an oil well explosion off the Gulf. And the guy's watching CNN, and all of a sudden they announce the oil well explosion. He goes, oh, my God, it was predicted on air.
Ugh.
It's called Knowing. It's with Nicolas Cage.
Yes,
it's on,
right.
It's on YouTube. All right. My question is, did you know that Halliburton is involved with the oil well explosion? They were 20 hours before the explosion. They were fixing. They were sealing that oil well. And it exploded, and BP officials have already come forward with this information in congressional hearings, but they're not, you know, they're not publicizing this.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it. That company has been everywhere. Kelly, we're out of time. Keep us abreast of what's going on this week, would you?
I certainly will, George. Thanks for having me on. It's great, as always, and you're doing a fantastic job getting this out to the public, and I thank you, my friend. Smooth sailing until we talk again.
Up next, Whitley Strieber joins us as we talk about the Omega Point. Stand by for that.